Stephen Mayne, shareholder activist, is with me this afternoon after just getting off the phone to Mick Gatto. Hello.
Oh, hi, Linda. Yeah, Mick's chasing a few bucks for me down in Singapore. Yes. I was actually disappointed with Mick because all the action's down there at the convention centre today. There's a big creditors meeting. It's still going. The questions are firing in. And Mick's not following the main game.
He's got other things on his mind. He's been obviously told to go around and do some digging elsewhere.
That's right. There's a pile of cash stashed under some oval in Singapore and a big mix out there. But, yeah, look, what a fiasco the whole thing is. I mean, our financial system is just a joke when, people have so lost confidence in ASIC and the ASX that, people almost are taking seriously a colourful underworld figure standing up and saying, come
I'll go
with
and
me.
Get it for you.
Yeah, come with me. Who needs? And at one level, Mick Gatto's right that the lawyers and the administrators and the receivers and the banks will all take vast sums of money out of the pie. And the administrators today have said there's only going to be 30 cents in the dollar left for the unsecured creditors who thought they had $500 million worth of shares of their money with Opus. They thought they had more than $500 million of their equity supported by a bit over $1 billion of debt. And now they've been told, well, you might get $150 million back from that. And, extraordinary. So, my sort of attitude is if Mick Gatto's the answer, it's time to have a royal commission, So,
it probably is. Oh, that's lovely. Oh, that's good. But ANZ's not coming out of this terribly well, are they?
Well, I think ANZ's suffering a massive reputational hit here. Robert Gottliebson wrote today, I read online, that this will be the equivalent of the Westpac letters. And the Westpac letters affair was when Westpac's name was really trashed in the 1980s when they flogged all these farmers, these dodgy Swiss loans. And they went through the parliament and it damaged them big time. And I think ANZ is going to suffer in a major way here. I mean, you don't sell out Herb Elliott, an Olympic legend, who's the chairman of Fortescue Metals, which is one of Australia's 15th, 16th biggest company, worth $15, $16 billion. You don't just sell him out of $14 million worth of shares without even properly communicating him, such that his company is having to tell the stock exchange, I may have sold these shares. I'm not sure yet. Mm. I'm still trying to establish. Mm. So, I think it's quite outrageous the way that ANZ have sold everyone up without talking to them first and have done it without disclosing their shareholdings. And
they get away with that then?
Well, they claim they had an exemption, which was 8 years ago, from ASIC related to their sort of funds management arm. But this was a situation where they directly owned the shares in name and reality and they were going to go and sell them. And they went out and sold them before they confessed to having them, when they actually had substantial shareholdings in more than 100 companies. And under the law, you have to disclose if you have a substantial shareholding. And
No. The
worst situation we've seen, I think this one was more Merrill Lynch, was a company in Singapore called Jade Technologies, where there was the president of the company was a guy called Anthony Goh, who owned 30%, and he was making a takeover for the company at 22 cents. So, the shares were trading around 22 cents. Suddenly, someone was dumping huge lines of stock onto the market, and it was apparently Merrill Lynch selling this guy's shares.
Oh,
and all these people bought them because they all thought, well, there's a takeover at 22 mm-hmm. cents. And yesterday they fell 70 cents to 6 cents. And Merrill's never come out and said, we've now taken control of 30% of this company. The takeover is off. They've dumped them first. So this sort of stuff is going on. And just the blind haste that the banks are showing here, just this greedy sort of grab the assets and flog them and stuff everyone else. And I think that's where there's going to be a massive backlash, that I don't think they're showing due care in the way they're handling
it. So backlash in terms of people selling their shares in banks as a result, or wanting to dump the shares that they have?
Well, I think particularly in WA, where ANZ have suddenly cleaned out a whole generation of mining entrepreneurs and directors. They're literally, the Fortescue guys are the biggest. But, I just think that the way they've gone about it with the poor disclosure and the non-consultation and the idea that ANZ has done nothing wrong. I mean, their CEO, Mike Smith, said yesterday, look, we would be supporting this company if there weren't irregularities. But, I mean, the bottom line here is that Laurie Amini, the CEO who's being blamed for everything, the CEO of Opus Prime, he worked for ANZ. He still has his mortgage with ANZ. He left there in 1997. He was basically a retailer for ANZ. ANZ was his wholesaler. They loaned him $600 million, and he farmed all those loans out to all these different people, anyone who walked off the street, and gave their junk stock. And so the responsibility comes down to, well, who didn't make the margin calls? And yes, it is Opus Prime. But at one level, ANZ also had a responsibility to make sure that the monies that were being lent were being properly administered. And
this seems to be has been the standard practice over the past several years, though, when everything was going gangbusters, that the money was going out there, but no one was actually keeping tabs on where the money was going to and who had it and what they were doing with it and whether they could actually pay that back and whether this is just part and parcel of what the whole scene has been about.
Yeah, well, the administrators today have said that there's six irregular accounts where monies were shuffled around, and there's $229 million owing on that. And I think the biggest figure is this Sydney criminal lawyer, Chris Murphy, who's a mate of James Packer. And so the biggest single play which has sent Opus under is the fact that Challenger Financial Group tanked from $6.50 to $1.50 over a five-month period. And Chris Murphy was the second biggest shareholder in that. And he lost more than $100 million on that. And now everyone else is sharing that pain. And it's just a remarkable situation. And even the chairman of Opus, Peter Galluli, has come out this week and said, "Oh, look, it was audited and everything was fine and there was nothing wrong. And then I was told 2 weeks ago this new information, so I resigned." Now, a lot of people will say, "Well, why wasn't your resignation posted on the website?" The insiders, people who might have got wind that there's something wrong, could all get their money out. Mm. But then the day ANZ slammed the door on that Thursday, everyone was stuck, and now everyone's taking a collective haircut of what's going to be $300 to $400 million.
Oh, I've been waiting for you to mention haircuts, and you have. It's taken a good few minutes to get there, but that's all right. Ian Henderson, in just a moment. Just quickly, Lachlan Murdoch and James Packer, I've heard a rumour that they're actually fighting each other, is that right?
Well, I think that this is the talk, that they were meant to be doing a deal where they were going to be buying the rump of James Packer's media empire, Consolidated Media Holdings. And they came out with a deal a few weeks ago, $4.80 a share and 50-50 partnership, and this is going to be terrific, and the sons of the moguls can do deals together, et cetera, et cetera. And then the sort of, the subprime credit crisis, and the original backers in San Francisco called the deal off. And then Lachlan's been trailing his jacket around the place in the US and here and thought he had some more backers. But then James Packer wouldn't come to the party in making what was a relatively minor adjustment to the share price. The talk is that they've had a fairly serious falling out over this. And
Again.
So, the whole OneTel, a lot of people sort of thought this was the make-up deal for OneTel, that the famous story of James Packer crying in his kitchen when apologising to Lachlan Murdoch. And that was what old man Murdoch apparently said was, "Look, we relied on the Packers. The Packers took us into this. Jody Rich was close with James, and we've dropped $500 million. Make it up to us." And old man Kerry said no, and then Kerry moved on, and then James was in control, and son Lachlan, who was on the OneTel board, who outed James at the inquest over that crying in the kitchen story, somehow managed to rebuild the relationship, and this was the deal. This was the make-up deal. But
It's
all gone horribly wrong, and everyone's looking pretty bad because James Packer is now known to be a seller, so everyone knows that he actually wanted to flog 75% of his media rump, which includes things like 25% of Foxtel and 50% of Fox Sports and 25% of Channel 9 and 25% of ACP, that he actually wanted to flog 75% of all of that. So he really is Mr. Casinos, who just has no interest in the media, but is arguing with his old mate over price, and now had another falling out.
So, hope there's more crying.
Well, in the kitchen, yes.
I love the fact it's in the kitchen. 13 to 6. Hendo, in a moment.
Mick Gatto is on the money trail, Stephen, isn't he?
Yeah, Stephen's just been chatting with him, trying to get a few dollars back from him.
It's not bad. I like that. Opus Prime, I suppose you've told everyone about the 30 cents in the dollar, have you?
Yeah. So a $350, $400 million loss for the investors.
Yeah. Well, Mick reckons he can do better by taking a few shortcuts.
Hate to think, but he's not a violent man.
No, isn't it? Perish the thought.
He's actually asking a few quiet questions.
He just didn't really want to say what those shortcuts were, because he didn't want to blow the gaff and, to other people who might be thinking of doing likewise.
I like that how Mick said that he has a lot of work and he never has to advertise. Well, today was his great PR marketing blitz, wasn't it?
Yeah,
we're talking about him.
You watch it. You watch it tonight. It was what you might call a
He was swaggering.
What might you call it, Hendo?
Bravado.
Yeah, no, it was a vintage performance.
Yeah,
I think
well done.
Yeah,
that's right.
Okay, got out of that all right.
Thank you. I want to talk about, Stephen, Sir Rod Eddington, because you and I have mentioned this before. This is prior to the traffic report coming out last week about, you said he was the busiest man in Australia?
Yeah, the busiest man in Australia. I've talked before about this, but I've discovered he's actually even busier. And I was most amused when his whole report got overtaken by the wind and the weather. And I'd sort of previously listed his 10 board seats and sort of, I heard him on the radio saying, yes, I caught the bus twice from Doncaster as part of this report. I thought, this guy, he's meant to be out there being a director of Allco, and he's meant to be on the board of Rio Tinto defending off BHP, and he's meant to be the top independent director with Rupert Murdoch on News Corp, and he's meant to be chairman of Infrastructure Australia and all these other gigs, and he's out there taking buses and doing this massive report, which I think is quite a good report. But he was in the studio with John Fain taking calls about, instead of one call was about his report, the next call was about the power being off. And then I discovered that he's actually one of the directors of True Energy Holdings, which is one of our power companies here in Melbourne.
Yes.
And he's also a director of the parent company, CLP Group, in Hong Kong, which has $5 billion worth of Australian power assets. And they actually service gas and electricity to more than a million Australians in the Victoria, South Australia, New South Wales. So here was the guy trying to sell his transport report, and he could have been answering the questions about why the lights were out, and I'll just ring my boys down there at True Energy and get your lights back on down there. So, I mean, what an amazing guy. He's chairman of Kevin Rudd's business advisory group. He's chairman of Melbourne Major Events. He's the chairman of JP Morgan in Australasia, which has, you know, lent $2 billion to Centro, trying to get it back. And, he has got literally 11 gigs and is unprecedented. So I don't know how he does it.
He's just a busy man and obviously has a BlackBerry or something that he sleeps with under his pillow, like Madonna.
Well, that's right. Well, his News Corp gigs in New York, his CLP gigs in Hong Kong, his Rio Tinto gigs in London.
Frequent flyers are on the rise.
Well, we're lucky to have the former British Airways guy back here in Melbourne. He is a luminary for Melbourne to have. But how often can he be here? So I just marvel at the fact that he managed to do that report.
That's lovely.
It was a pretty checkered response to it. I was surprised that so many people, quite a few people took a long handle to it relatively quickly.
Mostly about the greenhouse emissions. And particularly those who are very much as supporters of public transport.
I mean, as a Rio Tinto director, of course, he wants, you know, massive iron ore and coal sales and steel and construction and more tunnels and as a power industry guy, he wants, I'm not going to be too cynical there.
But you have been. I just want to quickly get a word from you about the Daily Telegraph, because it's not often that you are defending the Reserve Bank, in particularly Glenn Stevens sort of saying that our interest rates are too high and all those sorts of things. But you reckon they've been going a bit below the belt?
Well, it's funny, the Daily Telegraph in Sydney on Saturday ran a big picture of the governor of the Reserve Bank on the front page and called him the most useless Australian, and then have followed up with another front page today, and it's basically been a massive tabloid attack on him, saying, you know, you're putting up interest rates, you want to put up taxes, and we even have my old friend Glenn Milne writing columns, talking about him being a Protestant who doesn't want to spend money and wants people to work harder and suffer pain, and you know, his wife works as a perfume salesman at Myer, and she should know that the sales are falling, and then of course you've had the chairman of Myer leaking his letter. He wrote a letter to Glenn Stevens saying, we're all hurting. And, of course, the chairman of Myer is a guy called Bill Wavish, who is saddled with a pile of private equity debt, a group of Texans who've bought Myer, and was also an executive at a company called Chase Corp, which collapsed $1 billion of debt back in 1989. So he knows a bit about sort of debt and high interest rates. So there's a few people coming at the governor right now.
Yeah, there is. And what about things like being a Protestant? Sorry.
Yeah, I think it's a bit rough. But we do have the highest interest rates in the Western world, and they probably should be coming down. So I guess there is a sort of a sensible argument behind the unfair attacks.
But go for him at that level.
Yeah, play the man like that.
Play it straight, don't play the man.